Hello, and welcome to Here and Now. Today is Friday the 16th of January, and here we are, a slightly depleted green team, gathered together to read you articles from the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post. My name is Gwen Wedden, and today I'm joined by Chris and Lynn, who will introduce themselves in a moment. This morning's a wonderfully bright day, a little oasis in the almost constant wet weather. So let's make the most of it. Put the kettle on and listen to some local news while you enjoy your cuppa.
Hello, it's Chris here, and I have the Tynmouth Post and Dawlish Gazette headline. Is it last orders for pubs thanks to rate hike crisis? Teignbridge pubs face rate hike crisis. A Teignbridge pub which has been closed for 6 years has seen a near doubling of its rateable value in the latest round of business rate hikes, crippling pubs and the leisure and hospitality industries. The Dolphin Inn in Kenton last served a pint in 2019, before its doors were locked for the last time. There has now been a successful community bid to buy the pub, working in partnership with the owner and for the Dolphin to once again be a hub for everyone in the village. However, County Councillor Alan Connett says the rateable value for the Dolphin in April 2023 was just £5,000, but from this April it will shoot up to £9,000. The rateable value is the amount business rates, which are set by the government, are calculated on and not what they actually pay. Councillor Connett, who represents the Exminster and Holden Division on Devon County Council, has researched the potential increases in rates for local pubs and other hospitality businesses in the area. He said, if not punished by the government in this budget, then many of our local community pubs will likely be thrashed in the next round of business rate valuations. There's a triple whammy for many pubs and hospitality businesses of the crucial jobs tax, high energy prices, and now the business rates being hiked too. If local pubs have not been caught in the business rates net this time, they almost certainly will when it comes round again. The government is calling last orders for many small local community pubs, especially those in rural areas like ours. In Star Cross, two pubs will see a near doubling of their rateable value, but one is affected far more than the other. Councillor Connett explains, the Driftwood Inn, previously known as the Galleon, will become liable for business rates from this April. Currently, its rateable value is £8,400, but in 3 months' time, it shoots up to £16,500, and I estimate that this will bring a full rates demand for over £6,000, subject to any government-funded reliefs to help with the financial blow. The business premises with a rateable value below £12,000 are exempt from business rates, so just up the road in Star Cross, the Atmospheric will see its rateable value double from £5,250 to £10,500. But because it's under the £12,000 threshold, I understand there will be no business rates to pay. Another local pub caught in this business rates trap is the Poachers in Ede. Its rateable value is currently £9,500, but increases to £13,500 in April, putting it just £1,500 above the exemption limit. One pub that will be breathing a sigh of relief is the Royal Oak in Exminster. It will see its rateable value go from £8,750 to dead on £12,000, but is only just exempt from business rates. The news is not so good for the other pub in Exminster, the Stowey Arms. The Stowey's rateable value goes up from £13,100 to £15,500, although its landlady is about to quit. Other local pubs like the Huntsman in Ede and the Seven Stars in Kenford have also had their rateable values increased, but they remain just under the £12,000 threshold, which excludes them from paying business rates.
Hello there, Lynn here. A peek behind the photo booth curtain. a South Devon woman who is obsessed with analog photo booths, has had her pictures taken in them hundreds of times over the past 30 years, and hopes to have an analog booth installed in the county permanently. Ashburton-based artist Kate Tyler has dedicated her life to using analog photo booths, both creatively and as a way of documenting herself. Her passion for photo booths started with the passport photo machine that was built into the wall of Lincoln Railway Station. What began as an excuse to preserve a moment with friends spawned a lifelong passion. I started visiting booths with friends, as you do, in the 1990s. They were the only means you had of getting a selfie, she said. We would pose, take silly pictures together, and invariably chop up the strips, and each one of us would keep a couple of the photos, she recalled. I always really loved the whole experience of adjusting the stool, pulling the curtain across, having that privacy and freedom to pose and be silly and do whatever you wanted in there. I transitioned from using it as a social thing with friends to really using it as the primary focus of my artwork. Kate has gone on to use hundreds of analog photo booths all over the world, seeking them out on family trips and often making trips just especially to use them. I've got a really big collection of passport photos of friends and family and people I've just met over the years, and I'm very grateful for that, says Kate. I now have a daughter, and I do the same with her. I take her to the photo booth regularly. When all the analog booths in the UK have been replaced with digital models in the 2000s, Kate would travel to Latvia to use the only remaining colour analog booth in Europe at the time. Located in the corner of a bus station in Riga, locals would look on amused as she spent days at a time creating different montages and artworks. I just camped out near this photo booth for a few days, just making art, doing stuff, because I hadn't been able to use a photo booth for quite a few years at that point. It was the only colour one in Europe, she said. In 2013, Fred Adolphus restored a model colour booth in a store in Manchester and especially invited Kate to be an artist in residence so she didn't have to travel quite so far as Riga. Last year, she secured a grant to bring an old analogue booth back to Ashburton for a month to develop her artistic projects. In the UK, there only remains a small number of analogue booths in London, Manchester, Leeds, Edinburgh, Brighton and Belfast. She said, I must have used hundreds of booths over the years. I would love to find a way to have a booth here in Devon, more permanently, but they're just so rare. Kate continues to travel to Manchester and London to use the booths there for her artwork and has said she's very grateful to the global community of photo booth fans that are working hard to restore and maintain these machines. There's a lovely photo of her just outside one of the very tired looking photo booths that's in Riga at the moment, but at least it's working.
Council unites to oppose the Exeter election cancellation. Unanimous opposition emerged at Devon County Council to the idea of cancelling this year's elections in Exeter. Members of the Liberal Democrat-led council voiced a shared view that the scheduled May elections for Labour-controlled Exeter City Council should go ahead as planned. The government has invited 64 councils in England to say if they would like elections postponed this year, amid concerns about the pressure on local officials running polls during a major local government reorganisation. Westminster will make the final decision. Although Devon County Council is not directly affected, leader Councillor Julian Brazil called a special meeting to formulate a response. Some questioned the necessity of the session, noting the absence of Labour councillors, while others suggested it could have been done online. Exeter City Council leader Phil Bialik attended in the public gallery. Councillor Brazil said, I intended to write a pretty scathing response to the minister's letter, but I wanted to hear the views of the full council. I'm hoping we can come to a consensus which will give more strength, as we will be speaking as one. He added that postponing elections was instinctively the wrong thing to do and expressed concern about the pace of local government reorganisation, which would replace Devon's county and district councils with a single unitary authority. Conservative councillor Dermot McGough said, "Local democracy thrives on regular, timely elections, and any disruption must be justified. The Labour government is putting pressure on our council, and I don't agree with reorganisation. It is total madness." Concerns were raised about local democracy being undermined and voters potentially being disenfranchised. Reform UK's councillor Michael Fife-Cook agreed the election should go ahead, but questioned the meeting's necessity. "We are not voting on this, but just giving our word, so we could have saved public money and done this on Teams," he said. After the meeting, Councillor Bialik told the Local Democracy Reporting Service that Devon councillors were interpreting the minister's letter politically. "They want to distract us from our work ahead of reorganisation," he said. Exeter City Council members will meet on the issue on Tuesday, January the 13th, and will submit their views to the government, which will decide whether elections go ahead.
Residents urged to check for unwanted pesticides. Newton Abbot residents are being urged to check garden sheds, workshops and garages for old or unwanted pesticides as part of a project to make the town pesticide free and a healthier place for future generations. As part of the Check the Shed initiative, householders can book a free collection of any weed killer, insect repellent, slug pellet or similar products that they no longer use or need, so they can be safely collected and disposed of. Check the Shed, which runs until the end of March, has been organised by community group Green Futures Newton Abbot, which is working with Newton Abbot Town Council and Suez Recycling and Recovery. It follows a successful pesticide collection initiative in Bradley that took place just over a year ago, in which 167 unwanted pesticide containers, equating to 140 kilograms of pesticide material, were collected from households across Newton Abbot's Bradley ward. Many home and garden pesticide products sit on a shelf in a shed or garage for some time. In some cases, with older products, there is a risk of containers beginning to decompose, allowing the toxic contents to leak out. People are warned by Green Futures coordinator Andrew Rothery. Green Futures hopes that by enabling residents to arrange the safe collection and disposal of these home and garden pesticide products, the risk of these toxic materials causing a hazard in the home or the local environment will be reduced. "The more Newton Abbot people can get behind this initiative, the better," Andrew said. "The town council no longer uses pesticides, and we want to help as many people as possible to go pesticide free. So please also spread the word. Maybe you have neighbours or family friends who have been gardening for many years and could benefit from this service."
Teambridge escapes the worst of Storm Goretti. Teambridge managed to escape the worst of the storm which battered Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly with 100 mile per hour winds. Power cuts affected 247 homes in and around Newton Abbot, but National Grid had expected power to be restored during Friday. Homes in Newton Abbot, Stoke-in-Tinhead and Sheldon were also affected. A power cable was brought down at Stover at about 11 p.m. on Thursday. The high tide proved dramatic along the Teambridge coast, and at Dawlish, seawater met the brook under the viaduct, and it came up beyond the steps. One person was seen out attempting to retrieve a bin, which had been moved several metres by the water. Dawlish Town Councillor Scott Williams described the river as running backwards. He also noted 15 ships sheltered from the storm, anchoring in Babbicombe Bay and Torbay. Photographer Paul Denning was in Tynmouth and reported watching waves crashing over the seafront. He said it was relentless and continued like that for over an hour. Has to be some of the biggest waves I've seen in Teignmouth for nearly 30 years, he said. Storm Goretti certainly made an entrance as the first named storm of the year. The public were all advised to stay away from the beaches, piers and seafronts as large waves and beach material may have been thrown onto the coastal roads.
Plans to transform verges into wildflower havens. Some verges in Newton Abbot have been earmarked for a transformation into wildflower havens. 8 sites have been identified by Newton Abbot Town Council to make the verges more wildlife friendly. Now the council is asking for residents' views on the proposals before the plans are finalised. The plans followed a survey last year asking for opinions on how the town's verges are managed, with 70% of respondents supporting reducing or changing mowing schedules to benefit wildlife. The 8 sites chosen for the trial reflect a range of local conditions and verge types. At each location, biodiversity surveys will be carried out before and after the changes to track the impact. A town council spokesman said, "This trial phase will help us refine our approach and determine how best to scale wildlife-friendly verge management more widely across the town. Our focus is on enhancing the biodiversity of our grass verges, creating healthier habitats for wildlife and more attractive green spaces for the community. The selected verges will continue to receive the usual 4 to 6 cuts a year. However, cuttings will be removed to gradually reduce soil fertility, creating conditions that favour the growth of wildflowers. At each site, where possible, 2 small sections would also be scarified. One would be sown with a suitable wildflower seed mix, while the other would be left unsown to assess the natural seed bank already present to show the most effective long-term approach for each verge. These areas will be carefully monitored throughout the year. Borders will be maintained and kept litter-free." The council says safety, visibility and general tidiness would remain priorities and all verges would continue to receive routine maintenance to ensure road safety is never compromised.
Runners invited to enter firefighters race. Adventurous runners who like off-road racing are invited to enter a popular charity 10K event in aid of firefighters. The Dartmoor Charity Run is organised by Princetown Fire Station on Friday, May the 29th, starting at 6 p.m. and is in aid of the firefighters charity. The race starts at the fire station and follows rocky paths with only a short paved stretch, spectacular moorland views and a few hills. A race organiser said, "Lace up for the Dartmoor Charity 10K run and help raise funds for our hard-working firefighting heroes. Join us for the Dartmoor Charity Run, an event bringing people together to support an amazing charity. Whether you're a seasoned runner or simply up for a fun challenge, this is a fantastic way to make a difference while enjoying the stunning Dartmoor scenery. All abilities of runners with any experience are welcome. And dogs can come too. After the run, stick around for the usual fantastic cakes, a barbecue and maybe a beer or two. This is a brilliant, friendly event with a great atmosphere. Come and run, support a great cause and enjoy a brilliant evening out on Dartmoor. This will be the 4th time the annual race has been held. Last year's event raised over £4,000, with previous races raising a total of 10,000. The Firefighters Charity exists to support firefighters in hard times, such as when injured or ill, whether they're feeling the stress of the job, approaching retirement, or struggling with other personal challenges. The charity supports serving and retained or full-time officers and their partners and loved ones. And there's a cheerful photograph of 2 of the racers from last year, all dressed up in their full kit, which they'd worn during that race.
Drivers ignore Dawlish Road rules. Drivers in Dawlish have been accused of ignoring new road restrictions. The new one-way system from Sandy Lane via Elm Grove Drive and Elm Grove Road has been bought in to allow work by South West Water. But the new route and 20-mile-per-hour speed limit have led to some motorists flouting these rules. And residents and other road users say the work is causing chaos. There have been regular reports of cars and vans defying the signs and continuing to come down Exeter Road. The work is causing further headaches as students, parents and staff at both Dawlish College and Gatehouse Primary School are also affected. For the duration of the work during term time, road entrances and exits at the Exeter Road and Sandy Lane junctions will be manned at school drop-off and pick-up times. One onlooker said, "Is there anyone out there who can do something about this chaos? Watched mums and dads with school kids this morning complete shambles at Elm Grove Road and surrounding areas." Another said, "It's just ridiculous. They're just ignoring the signs. People need to slow down and take the correct route." South West Water said it would bring in extra signage after the first day of the one-way system was described as chaotic. Following complaints, South West Water, which is midway through a multi-million pound project aimed at improving water quality, promised to address the signage. A spokesman for South West Water said, "We're installing additional signage on Sandy Lane, Elm Grove Drive as well, to make sure the division is as clear as possible. Work in this area has been due to be carried out in the summer holidays, but was delayed following the discovery of an unmapped gas pipe. The work has now started, and I'm afraid due to continue until March 27th. Furious drivers and residents have said that the signage was very poor.
1,500 people signed a petition to save hospital. A petition to stop the sale of Moreton Hampstead Community Hospital has been signed by almost 1,500 people. The hospital was closed last summer by the NHS due to safety and infrastructure issues, which included a leaking roof. Now the petition is calling on NHS Property Services Devon, Integrated Care Board and MP Mel Stride to pause the proposed sale of the building and work with local residents, community organisations and the GP practice to retain the site within the NHS estate. Alternatively, the petition is asking the building be transferred into community ownership for locally delivered health and wellbeing services. The building, which predates the NHS, is considered old and outdated and has suffered further deterioration, including damp, such that it is an unsafe environment for staff and patient care. It is understood the high cost of replacing the roof is not considered cost effective. The petition is calling for an immediate pause on any sale or disposal process by NHS Property Services. It also wants an agreement in principle that should disposal proceed, the site be transferred at a nominal cost of £1 to the people of Moreton Hampstead, acknowledging its historic purpose, community value and original donation to the town. The hope is, with sustained support from the ICB, the site could be developed into a health and community hub for district nurses, a care agency, GP overflow and local wellbeing services. Built in 1900 for the people of Moreton Hampstead, the hospital no longer had inpatient beds, but had been used as a base for the community nursing team and a leg ulcer clinic. NHS Devon says it has been working with a group of community representatives chaired by the Moreton Hampstead Parish Council as part of the ongoing involvement and engagement. But the petition says, although it no longer has inpatient beds, it remains an important community asset, well suited to hosting local healthcare, district nursing, a care agency, and wider community initiatives. It has been extensively and continuously used since its inception. There are claims the building could be sold either on the open market or to a charitable community bid. The closure follows more than a decade of effort by the local GP practice and other groups to secure a future for the site. The petition states local residents, the GP practice and community groups could take responsibility for the hospital if given the necessary time, access and support. This would protect the building for NHS and community purposes and prevent its loss to private development.
Press officer wins prestigious RNLI volunteering award. A volunteer at Tynmouth Lifeboat Station has received a top award from the Royal National Lifeboat Institute. Amy Furlong, who is the volunteer lifeboat press officer at Tynmouth, has received the RNLI Excellence in Volunteering Award for her commitment to strengthening Tynmouth Lifeboat Station's communications and public engagement. The RNLI Excellence in Volunteering Award is given to individuals who consistently go above and beyond their volunteer role and who demonstrate the RNLI's core values of selflessness, courage, dependability and trustworthiness. Since taking on her volunteer press officer role, Amy has championed the RNLI's One Crew ethos by bringing together separate Facebook pages for station operations and fundraising into a single platform and strengthening communication and public engagement. The unified page now reaches more than 7,800 followers, increasing awareness of the station's life-saving work through regular engaging content. Amy has also developed strong working relationships across volunteer teams and with the local press and regularly supports the organisation of both fundraising and volunteer events. On presenting Amy with her award, Tynmouth RNLI's fundraising chair, Wendy Richards-Wood, described how her positive can-do attitude made her a valuable member of the team. "I was completely shocked and quite taken aback," Amy said. "I really do love my role at the station and I'm very lucky to work alongside such a great and diverse team. It means a lot to be part of something like this."
Charity shops hit by rise in doorstep fly tipping. A Devon-based charity dedicated to equine welfare is facing a disturbing rise in fly tipping incidents outside its charity shops. Staff at the Mare and Foal Sanctuary are increasingly finding bags of rubbish, poor quality furniture and domestic waste dumped on the shop doorstep. "Our Babbacombe shop seems to be hit particularly hard," said Dawn Green, retail area manager at the Mare and Foal Sanctuary. "At best, people are leaving their unwanted items outside our shop at night because it's a convenient time for them and they think it might do some good for our charity. But unfortunately, their actions are creating a health and safety hazard, causing great distress to our team members who need to deal with large piles of waste before they can even enter the shop and incur extra expenses in disposal fees. The situation has prompted the charity to reach out to the local community, asking for understanding and support. Dawn Green explains, "We often speak to other charity shop colleagues who are facing exactly the same issue. It's uncomfortable to raise this because we genuinely appreciate the kindness of our donors, but we hope that if more people understand the danger, distress and expense that comes with dumped items, they will consider waiting until the shop is open." It's important to note that fly tipping is not only a nuisance but also illegal, with significant fines and penalties for offenders. The Mare and Foal Sanctuary hopes to bring awareness to the situation while promoting community kindness and respect. Operating across the southwest, the sanctuary charity shops play a role in funding its mission of rescuing, caring for, and rehoming vulnerable horses and ponies. The charity also offers equine-assisted wellbeing sessions, connecting children and adults who may find life challenging with horses and with nature, fostering healing and personal growth. Support from the sanctuary comes primarily from charitable donations and legacy gifts, which are vital for sustaining its operations. The organisation champions biodiversity, environmental care and sustainable living qualities that are reflected in its commitment to recycling donated goods. However, strict retail regulations govern the saleability of items and all donations must meet safety standards. Good quality, safe items are always appreciated and we're very fortunate to have loyal supporters who provide us with goods we are pleased to sell at bargain prices, said Dawn Green, manager. But we kindly ask that people only donate items in person during our shop opening hours. This ensures we can assess the quality and safety before they hit the shelves and allows us the opportunity to thank our donors personally. Donating responsibly makes a huge difference to us by positively impacting the lives of both animals and people in need.
Special birthday party for sick girl, thanks to a raffle. A festive charity raffle organised by the owner of a Dawlish salon has not only raised over £1,000 for a dog rescue, but will also enable a seriously ill little girl to enjoy a special birthday party. The 12 Days of Christmas fundraiser, organised by the owner of Signature Hair and Beauty in Dawlish, saw more than 35 prizes of vouchers, hampers and gifts donated by local businesses. The raffle draw, which took place in the Lansdowne pub on Christmas Eve, generated £1,192.67 for Saving Pound Dogs Cyprus, SPDC. SPDC is a non-profit organisation dedicated to rescuing and rehoming stray dogs to loving homes in the UK, Cyprus and Germany. Chrissy has supported the SPDC since adopting a dog from the charity. One prize, a children's party for 12, donated by the Mount Pleasant Inn, was won by 77-year-old Tony Smith. Having no use for the prize, he agreed to swap, and the party was donated to a Dawlish-based family whose young daughter has been diagnosed with stage 4 neuroblastoma. Keevy McElway, who turned 4 on New Year's Eve, has been receiving treatment at Bristol Children's Hospital since being diagnosed with the rare childhood cancer last January. She will now be able to belatedly celebrate her birthday with family and friends. The McElway family, who have lived in Australia for 10 years, had been home visiting family when Keevy fell ill. After learning of Keevy's illness, the Dawlish community has rallied round. A GoFundMe page has generated nearly £15,000 to help the family juggle hospital trips, accommodation, support for her siblings, and to pay for treats when Keevy is well enough. The family intend to donate some of the fundraising total to the charities that have helped them over the last year. Chrissy said she was very grateful to all the businesses that contributed to the raffle and everybody who bought tickets. The 12 Days of Christmas fundraiser has created a happy ending for dogs and for a little girl, she commented. While this year's fundraising total was just shy of the £1,281.67 achieved in the draw that she ran last year, Chrissy is hopeful that donations to the collection tin in the Signature Salon might help them beat the 2024 total. Considering how people are struggling with the cost of living this year, we are so very pleased to have raised so much, Chrissy said.
And now there are the obituaries to let you know of. Howard Martin Palmer died peacefully on the 26th of December and he was aged 85. His funeral service will be held on the 23rd of January at Torquay Crematorium and further information can be gathered from Oliver Knapman Funeral Services, Orchard Gardens, Tynmouth. Mercia Mary Parsons passed away at Palm Court Nursing Home in Dawlish on the 13th of December. She was 98. Her funeral has already taken place. Judith Marie Muddy passed peacefully away, aged 88 years, at Bishop Stainton House on the 27th of December. Funeral service will be held at St John the Baptist, Bishop Stainton, 27th of January, and further information from Les Down Funeral Director at Stockman and Loram, 7 Churston Broadway, Paignton. Marie Jean or Jeannie Gowing died peacefully on the 3rd of January 2026 at Palm Court Nursing Home. Funeral will take place at Torquay Crematorium on Thursday the 29th of January. And Margaret Helen Arrowsmith, again resident at Palm Court, died on the 6th of January. She was aged 76. The funeral service is on the 30th of January at St Michael's the Archangel in Tynmouth. Further information from Oliver Knapman Funeral Services, Orchard Gardens, Tynmouth.
And now for upcoming events. There's just a couple of reminders for what we have in the immediate week coming up. Tuesday the 20th of January, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Trago Mills. And on Wednesday the 21st, Holcombe Garden Society meet at 2:30 p.m. at Holcombe Village Hall. And the only thing there is for the following week is that Tuesday the 27th of January, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Otter Nurseries at Ottery St Mary. The cost is £15.50. And the telephone number for Dawlish Community Transport is 01626 888890. And then there's just another notice from us regarding return of your USB sticks and pouches. Please, please, could you have a rummage round and see if you've got any that have avoided being sent back so far? We do have a problem sometimes with not enough sticks for us to send out on the current issue. So the idea is you are allowed, I think it's 4 sticks without returning any. After that, you won't get any more until sticks have been returned. So if you happen to know about anybody who is currently not receiving our recordings, just maybe a gentle reminder, please, to see if they've got any pouches or USB sticks that they could return to us. Thank you.
Now a sport article. Teens toppled by runaway league leaders. Tynmouth RFC ran into unbeaten South West 2 leaders Western Supermare with predictable results. Western showed why they are 24 points ahead of the Chasers with a resounding 69-12 win over the Teens, as Western won 57-18 at Bitton Park when the sides met first time round. The outcome was hardly surprising. The Tynmouth forwards matched Western well in the set pieces and managed a couple of well-earned tries. Dan Haywood scored the first try just before half-time when Tynmouth worked the ball up the pitch and Kai Clayton was brought down just short of the line. Haywood retrieved the ball and found a gap to score. Try number 2 was from a line-out followed by a maul, which Western defended well. The ball was passed down the line to Jack Bowen, who spotted an opportunity to tear through the score. George Franklin, the Tynmouth captain, said he was glad to get this game out of the way and to concentrate on climbing away from the bottom 3. Western are a very strong team, so it was always going to be difficult to get anything from the game, said Franklin. There were some good individual performances and we played well during this period, but I guess the main positive is we don't have to play Western again.
Where craft meets engineering. An inspiring new exhibition that explores the playful power of movement in craft and design gets underway in Bovey Tracy later this month. Kinetic, which opens at Make Southwest Jubilee Gallery at Riverside Mill in the town on January the 24th, celebrates the ingenuity of artists, makers and designers who bring objects to life through motion. From exquisite jewellery that unfurls like clockwork to playful automata, puppets, robotic artistry, kinetic ceramics, exploded bicycles, and ingenious contraptions made from discarded materials. The exhibition showcases the extraordinary creativity that emerges when craft and engineering meet. Kinetic is about more than movement. It's about curiosity, imagination and creativity as forces that drive innovation, said Laura Wesley, the CEO of Make Southwest. We hope to inspire the next generation of engineers, designers and makers to see motion as a language of possibility. Far more than a static display, Kinetic invites audiences of all ages to get hands-on with the exhibition and the interactive works. And the show's accompanied by a program of free family making events designed to inspire visitors to invent their own moving creations alongside demonstrations by exhibiting artists. Kinetic, where craft meets engineering, runs from the 24th of January to the 18th of April 2026 at Make Southwest Jubilee Gallery, Riverside Mill, Bevy Tracy. And the postcode's TQ139AF. The exhibition's open from Tuesday to Saturday from 10 a.m. and 5, and entry is free. And there are details on the makesouthwest.org UK website, should you wish to have a look at that.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Argyle move quickly to add Curtis to ranks. Plymouth Argyle head coach Tom Cleverley has bolstered his squad in a bid to fire the Pilgrims up the EFL League One table after completing his first signing of the January transfer window. Argyle have secured the permanent signing of experienced winger Ronan Curtis, with the 29-year-old joining from Port Vale on a 2.5-year deal. The move is seen as a statement of intent as Cleverley looks to add attacking bite and drive to push up the standings. Curtis arrives with a proven League One pedigree, having spent the bulk of his English career at that level. He began his career with Derry City in Northern Ireland before enjoying a prolific spell at Portsmouth, where he made 184 appearances and scored 42 goals. Short-term stints at AFC Wimbledon and Port Vale followed, further adding to his Football League experience. Cleverley said the winger's knowledge of the division would be a major asset as Argyle aimed to build consistency and climb the table. He praised the speed of the deal, thanking the board director of football, Derek Adams, and the recruitment team for moving quickly to bring added quality into the squad early in the window. Adams himself was delighted with the deal, saying Ronan is proven at this level and will add real competition for places to Tom's squad. He offers excellent quality in the wide areas, providing goals and assists wherever he has been. Alongside that, he is a direct, exciting winger who the Green Army will enjoy watching.
New plans to improve welfare for hens and lambs. Laying hens and lambs will benefit from better animal welfare standards under detailed plans set out by the government this week. Under the proposals unveiled in January the 12th, all colony cage systems across the laying hen sector would be phased out by 2032, including for smaller producers. Proposals for tighter restrictions on sheep mutilation practices, such as castration and tail docking, that cause pain to the lambs and are often carried out without pain relief, are also being consulted on. Enriched colony cage eggs supply just over 20% of the UK shell egg production. These cages heavily restrict the movement of British laying hens, with up to 80 birds in each cage, and each bird having space that is no bigger than a sheet of A4 paper. With the UK's leading retailers, from Sainsbury's to Aldi, already committed to not selling eggs produced from cage systems, and widespread public support, the government said it was announcing the move in line with widespread best practice and public opinion. To improve welfare for lambs, farmers will be expected to take steps to minimise pain when castration and tail docking has to be carried out. This could include greater use of pain relief and consideration of alternative methods. The government says this reflects the latest scientific evidence and follows expert advice from the Independent Animal Welfare Committee. Farming Minister Dame Angela Eagle said, "We are committed to improving the lives of farm animals and to supporting farmers to produce food sustainably, profitably, and with the high standards consumers expect. British consumers want high animal welfare standards, and these measures reflect these values, creating healthier livestock and high welfare food production." Anthony Field, head of Compassion in World Farming UK, said, "We warmly welcome the UK government's leadership in honouring a key commitment in its animal welfare strategy by swiftly launching a consultation on phasing out the use of cages for laying hens. This marks an important and long-awaited step towards ending the cage age. We are optimistic that this will be the first of many meaningful and lasting changes. Phasing out cages for the millions of hens kept behind bars every year cannot come soon enough, and we hope that the outcome of this consultation will be an ambitious timeline for phasing out these cruel systems. We also welcome the launch of consultation to improve the welfare of lambs. Lambs are routinely subjected to painful, unnecessary mutilation. Castration and tail docking are usually carried out without anaesthetic or pain relief, causing great suffering, so this is an extremely encouraging move. We look forward to seeing positive changes for millions of other farmed animals in the coming years and to working with the government to achieve this."
Shout out for early signs of spring. As part of the UK begin to warm up after the wintry cold snap, citizen scientists across Devon are being asked to keep a keen eye out for emerging signs of spring. Any early sightings of daffodils, snowdrops and other spring indicators can be logged as part of an annual Signs of Spring survey by the Field Studies Council in partnership with the Royal Society of Biology. Members of the public are asked to record when they first see 10 different indicators of warmer weather, including snowdrops, daffodils, bumblebees, ladybirds, the first cut of a lawn, and dragonflies. Last year, sightings of snowdrops topped the chart with 462 sightings, while bumblebees were second with 299 records. Sightings can be logged through the Signs of Spring portal.
Care Home sets dementia care benchmark. A Dawlish care home has been praised for setting a benchmark for outstanding dementia practice across the social care sector. Sefton Hall, a Southern healthcare home, received the praise from Meaningful Care Matters, MCM, auditors, who were assessing the care home's butterfly programs. The auditors said the company's flagship dementia care home, Sefton Hall, reflected exceptional standards of person-centred care and awarded it a Level 1 Outstanding rating. One of the auditors and MCM Managing Director, Peter Buart, said, "With strong leadership, cultural inclusivity and consistent excellence in care delivery, Sefton Hall continues to embody the ethos of being free to be me, setting a benchmark for outstanding practice across the social care sector in England. MCM rate care providers on care delivery, individual care plans, including the restricted use of medication, and the meaningful relationships between staff and residents. Those dementia care providers which demonstrate a high number of meaningful interactions against a long list of criteria are awarded the status of a butterfly home." Peter added, "Every team member contributes meaningfully, embodying the home manager's philosophy that every person matters. Head carers and nursing staff actively ensure that care is relationship-driven, meaningful, and emotionally authentic." Auditors also praised their consistently exceptional standard of person-centred care, the culturally and linguistically diverse workforce, the unhurried and sociable mealtimes, and the way in which activities are woven into daily life. Geoffrey Cox, Managing Director of Southern Healthcare, said, "A Level 1 Outstanding rating from MCM is an amazing outcome, made even more exceptional by the auditor's additional comments, which truly reflect the skills and knowledge of the people in our team, their compassion, heart, and meaningful connection to the people they are caring for. To borrow the auditor's words, Sefton Hall is underpinned by a deeply embedded culture of person-centered, relationship-driven care where both people living and working in the home truly flourish.
Devon Loves Dogs launches a competition. A new competition aimed at promoting responsible dog ownership and protecting green spaces launches today, encouraging dog owners to bag it and bin it. Led by Devon Loves Dogs, the competition is being delivered in partnership with organisations including Devon Wildlife Trust, RSPB and Teabridge Council. It will run across popular walking locations including Dawlish Warren, Dawlish Countryside Park and Ridgetop Park. The initiative highlights the impact dog waste can have on wildlife, livestock, people and other dogs, while celebrating the many dog owners who already pick up and dispose of dog poo responsibly. Participants can take part in an online competition, testing their knowledge of responsible dog walking and pledging to always bag and bin their dog's waste. A dicky bag for carrying collected poo without any smells will be awarded to a winner each month from January to March. Trish Waller, Devon Loves Dogs new project assistant, brings experience in dog rescue and welfare and enthusiasm to encourage dog owners to get out and about in the countryside with their furry friends. Trish said, "Dog poo left behind on the ground, including in bags, is the number one complaint about dog owners. We know most people do a great job of picking up, but together we can make the countryside safe for other people, wildlife and our dogs." This competition is about raising awareness and encouraging everyone to play their part. Julie Owen, Devon Loves Dogs project coordinator, said, "This competition is a great way to encourage responsible dog walking while rewarding people who are already doing the right thing."
Dawlish black swans are breeding again. The iconic black swans of Dawlish are getting broody, just weeks after the loss of their previous two cygnets, who are thought to have been swept away during heavy rain. Parents Bert and Kimber have already built a new nest. One egg has already been laid, but over the weekend, unfortunately, it was probably taken by a seagull. The nesting area, which is in the bulrushes next to the brook, has been cordoned off by town council waterfowl wardens to ensure its safety. This new site has already proved a popular and successful breeding area for the pair. This time last year, Bert and Kimber laid 5 eggs there, which all hatched. There are now a total of 8 black swans living on the brook. Autumn and winter are breeding seasons for the swans, and during the breeding season, the 3 separate swan groups are extraterritorial, and the 4 youngsters are spending a lot of time behind the bandstand on the lawn at the moment. Bert keeps pushing the other pair further upstream, almost as far as the toilets by Barton Hill car park. Earlier today, one of the swans was also seen building another nest on the purpose-built island further down the brook at Tuck's Plot. In December, unfortunately, 2 cygnets were thought to have been swept away during heavy rain. Bert and Kimber had built a nest in a precarious position on a small island in the middle of the brook. Although 3 eggs hatched, one was soon lost to heavy rain, the other 2 also succumbed to the fast-flowing water. Dawlish has one of the largest black swan populations in the UK, and the bird has been the town's emblem for more than 50 years.
Pensioner grateful to mystery couple. A pensioner is hoping to find a mystery couple who helped him out in Newton Abbott on January the 6th, so he can personally thank them for their generosity. Tim Pete, who lives in Tynmouth, faced a half-hour wait for his bus home after a trip to Newton Abbott. He decided to try and keep warm with a cup of tea. However, when he got to the cafe, he realised he didn't have quite enough loose change to pay for it. A couple who had seen the 80-year-old go into the cafe and come out empty-handed offered him £1 so he could get his hot drink. "The man even asked me if I wanted something to eat," Mr. Pete said. After drinking his tea, as Mr. Pete was queuing for his bus at around midday, the couple approached him again. This time, the man popped something into his pocket and told him he had dropped it in the cafe. When Mr. Pete looked in his pocket, he discovered that the man had given him £10. Mr. Pete was overwhelmed by the mystery couple's kindness and generosity. "I'm so thankful," he said. "They were really good Samaritans. You don't get many people like that about." He didn't manage to get the names of the couple who helped him, and he is hoping to track down the pair so he can get in contact and thank them personally. If anyone has any information about the couple who made this gentleman's day, please can you contact the Mid Devon Advertiser so you can be put in touch. Well, that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07 376 147 374. Your readers this week were Chris, Lynn and myself, and our producer is Mike. As usual, the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So, until next time, it's goodbye from us here in the studio.
Goodbye.